Hello and welcome back to Anger, Sadness, and Envy, the official podcast of Bungie fansite Rampancy.net. I'm Narcogen.
And I'm Trindicut.
And this is show number 3, focusing on the third playable level in Halo 3, Savo Highway. Well, before we get into Savo Highway, I guess I have to admit that although I played the level quite a bit in review for this podcast, my Xbox is now dead, so I don't know that we're going to have any music clips or sound clips for this episode.
Well, the original soundtrack has on Bungie.net, they've got a whole new website for it. We could probably scrounge a few clips off that, I guess, throw that in.
Yeah, and I'll be getting my copy as soon as I can. I usually check the iTunes music store for it.
Oh, I don't think the Americans have got it all for the iTunes. Unfortunately, Australia is still a little bit behind.
Well, actually, even the American store doesn't have it yet. There's usually a bit of a delay before it shows up there. Usually, it's there for the it's there in the stores as CDs first, and then a few months later, it shows up in the iTunes store.
Okay.
Well, anyway, Savo Highway. So Savo Highway is the campaign level that was used most commonly for all of the pre-release demonstrations for the press and for some select fans. They were given a chance to play through it from beginning to end before people got the chance just before release to play the whole game. And I don't know whether it's they chose this level because it has no story elements or whether they made this level without story elements because they wanted it for demonstration, but the level doesn't really have an opening cutscene. The cutscene that ends the previous level is really nothing more than a glorified Cortana moment. Crow's Nest ends when you get in that elevator in the hangar, and it catches fire and you fall into a dark pit, but there's nothing really that happens there. And the next level opens up, you're now in an area with some warthogs and some injured Marines, and it's a scripted sequence. There's some dialogue that goes on, but you never lose camera control. There are no Cortana moments anywhere in the level at all, and you don't get any kind of cutscene until the very end, and even that one doesn't really tell you much.
You do get a sort of a pausing moment where you do lose camera control for a moment, and that's when I don't think you do lose camera control, my mistake, but the Covenant cruiser flying above over while you're in a warthog on the highway.
Yeah, there is that little scripted moment. There are a few scripted moments, and of course there are the hologram generators spread out through the levels. One of the other little storytelling methods that you'll get, because you see a couple of those in Crow's Nest as well. You get to see Truth talking to some of the lower level brute commanders. You also get a few crashed phantoms where there's a radio playing and you get to hear some dialogue there. But there's no full-fledged cutscene at all. And even the little story elements are more their backstory. The story doesn't really move forward a whole lot in this area. And even the final cutscene is just a repetition. In fact, Lord Hood there gets to echo the words that Truth spoke during Halo 2, this idea that one final effort is all that remains, which I'm sure is a pretty intentional reference on Bungie's part to talk about that.
The Prophet of Truth doesn't know it yet, but he's about to get kicked right off his throne. You will take our city back and drive our enemy into the grave they've been so happily digging. One final effort is all that remains.
You hit it pretty much on the head there. I can't really have much to add. That's exactly what the level's about. I mean, we get introduced to the vehicles. We get introduced to some of them, not all of them. The Warthog, the new passenger Warthog, and the Chopper. The Wraiths are pretty much as they were in Halo 2, except with the gunner instead of automatic turrets, which you can't have in multiplayer for Halo 2.
Right. Actually, there are a couple of changes if you look at it, not just Halo 3 to Halo 2, but through the whole game. In Halo 1, basically all the Wraith had was a cannon. It had the big plasma cannon, and then that's all. And in Halo 2, they added the the turrets on the side, which of course you couldn't use even if you jacked the Wraith. You couldn't use them. Only the AI used them. But it also had boost. So the AI could use boost as a weapon against you to run you over, or you could use it. In Halo 3, we get a little bit more. We get the main cannon, we get the boost. Instead of the plasma turrets on the side, we have this movable plasma turret, because that happened to both tanks. They added, you know, they separated this the turret from the main gun, so that you actually need a separate NPC or a separate player to use it. But they also added this weak spot in the back.
That little hole with the power supply.
Yeah, because you can kill, you know, you can kill a Wraith by boarding at that spot, or even with small arms fire if you stand there and it doesn't turn around. So we get a first look at the Brute Choppers, and the first look at the new Wraiths, and this is the first chance you have to drive a Warthog, and as you pointed out, we also get the first look at the passenger Warthog. So you have a lot, probably the, you know, at least in the level so far in the game, you have the most choices for how to approach this from the very beginning than you have had in any other level prior to this. You can drive a traditional Warthog with a lag gun. You can man the gun. You could ride passenger in the lag Warthog. You could drive the troop Warthog, or you could ride passenger on the troop hog, or you could walk. The only thing that you can't do, of course, is that you can't sit in the back of the passenger Warthog, which isn't really a big deal anyway. You're going to have to just use whatever default weapon you've got, because there's no gun back there. So you might as well ride up front. The only thing that bothered me about that is, I think as a side effect of not being able to do that, there are a limited number of animations. So in multiplayer, you also can't get in the back. You can't fill up a troop hog full of all people in your party, because only two seats in the hog are really available. And also, because you can't get in, you can't make Marines who've gotten in those seats get out without flipping the Warthog over, which makes it really hard to change weapons. I'm sure everybody has played around a little bit to try and get a passenger hog full of heavily armed Marines. I've made a couple myself, a passenger hog full of Marines who are carrying rocket launchers, and I've seen other picks that are fuel rod guns, five people with fuel rod guns and one passenger hog. But you have to make sure you give those Marines the weapons before they get in. And if you don't, you've got to flip the Warthog over to get them out so you can change weapons.
I'm not that patient. I think I... the only time, if I had to get a weapon from them, I mean, I wouldn't even worry about giving them a weapon. I've tried it before. It's just, I can't flip those Warthogs. The new the passenger Warthogs just aren't how they were in Halo 1 or Halo 2. Or aren't like any of the Warthogs. But trying to get a Marine out of that was just too much for me. If I needed a weapon, to kill him.
Yeah, no, I spend a lot of time doing that, because you can really have an impact on how some of the vehicle sequences play out, depending on what kind of gun. I mean, most of the Marines are just running around with assault rifles, and it's really kind of useless. I mean, if you're going to go around with just the assault rifles, you really might as well not, you know, go with the Warthog. You might as well be on foot. But if you've got a guy who's got an unlimited rocket launcher or an unlimited fuel rod gun, you can take out lots of tanks or lots of choppers fairly easily. You've still got a lot of danger, of course. I mean, especially with the rockets, you know, because they're going to shoot them into the ground sometimes, or shoot them into the wall that you're next to.
Or if you're driving up a hill, they'll shoot it into the top of the hill as you're going over it.
But still, there's an awful lot of fun that you can have by doing that. But you've got to be, you're right, you do have to be really patient in order to do that, because you have to be willing, and you have to do it quickly too, because if you flip a passenger hog to get those backseat passengers out because you want to swap weapons with them to give them a better weapon, you have to have everything already ready, because if you walk too far away, they will flip the hog over and they will get in it. Usually, if you haven't gone past a certain trigger volume, they won't just drive off without you. But if you're already in a combat area, you know, then they will. You can't just leave a Warthog. And there was a thread in the HBO forum the other day. People said, you know, they really rather have an indestructible Warthog or make it so that Marines won't take your Warthog and drive away. And I thought that was a little bit too unrealistic. In fact, even the way I think it handles it now, that a vehicle that's empty but undamaged doesn't seem to be treated by the AI as a target. They'll ignore it. When I think, you know, in a real battle situation, the enemy would realize, hey, that's an enemy asset. I don't care if it's empty right now. You know, if somebody is coming around the corner and going to get in it, I should blow it up anyway.
Oh, maybe we'll see that change in Halo 4.
Don't go. See, now you're gonna cause problems.
There's no Halo 4.
We don't know whether there's any gonna be any Halo 4. We have no idea.
Well, they ended the story arc. One would think. Well, they wouldn't carry on the title. I would think personally. Oh, that's an argument for another day.
Okay, so another thing I noticed about this level, we talked about this in Sierra 117, actually, is that very often in the original Halo game, you could go from the very beginning of the level all the way to the end, and then if you just wanted to waste some time exploring the world, you could then walk back from that point all the way back to the beginning. And you can do this, for instance, in some of the really long levels, like Assault at the Control Room. You can go right up until the very last door that if you push the button, you'll trigger the final cutscene. And you can turn around and walk all the way back to the beginning of the level where you started. And that most of the Halo 3 levels don't seem to let you do that. For instance, there's a fairly lengthy tunnel driving sequence that starts this level after you or one of the Marines opens up a door that leads into this cave. You drive through the cave following a line of flares until you come to another door that leads outside. Once you progress far enough past this door, that door closes and locks. So you can't return to the tunnel or to the initial room that you start in.
Well, that would probably just be for the graphics engine so that it's not handled so much at once.
I think it is. I think they've made areas that are just so big and so detailed that they can't load them all. Now, that's one thing, actually. That's a very natural thing. Okay, you know, it's natural for this door to close behind you, you know, for security purposes or whatever it is. But if you progress even further, for instance, once you enter the last area, you come out through another tunnel out onto a broken section of highway where there's the largest vehicular encounter in this level where you get, there are a couple of raids up on the hill in the next segment of highway, and there are phantoms that come in periodically, and they will drop off a wraith, or they will drop off a pair of choppers, until you have pairs of choppers coming at you periodically. Once you enter that area, the tunnel entrance behind you, where you come out from the previous phantom drop area, you come down, and there are two brutes on a section of highway with choppers. That area closes off just like it does in the final area of Sierra 117. There's a tunnel there. When you drive back, there's a rock face filling the tunnel area. So once you've gone into that last area, you can't go back to most of the level at all. The only accessible portion of that is just the last vehicle encounter and then the last segment of highway where there's a roadblock just before the tunnel.
I'm gonna have to go back. I didn't see that. I should have gone. I went back in Crow's Nest, but it turns out that you have to go back anyway. So none of it was really closed off. But I'm gonna go back on the Storm. I can see a few places where they might do that. I think it's a general approach they've made to it. I mean, we found that in Sierra 117, Crow's Nest, you're going back and forth, so it probably doesn't need to happen.
Yeah, and in the storm that happens too. We'll talk about that when we come to that level, but it does.
What did you think about the chopper? The completely new vehicle that we see, the first brute vehicle that we see.
I like the chopper a lot. I know that there are people who don't much like it. But it's a question of two perspectives, right? It's like, well, as an enemy to fight, do I like it? And what is it an improvement over, or what is it a replacement for? And then as a vehicle to use, how do I like it? To take the second one first, I like it as a vehicle to use for a couple of reasons. One is that gun is really powerful, and it's really long range.
It's a fast brute shot.
Yeah, you can take out vehicles and turrets from quite a long ways away with that, faster even, I think, than the lag. I haven't tested it out, but it certainly feels that way. And it also turns very quickly, and it has a boost. It's good for making jumps. So, for instance, there's that sequence again where you're supposed to go over a broken bit of highway, and all the Marines will abandon the vehicles that you've brought with you so far. But you can easily get a brute chopper into that next segment. This is the area just before the major phantom encounter, where there are a bunch of little huts up on the hill to the left, and there are phantoms that come down and drop groups, very large groups of brutes and some grunts. Some of those brutes will have fuel rod guns, and then the last thing that comes is a wraith. You can bring a brute chopper into that area pretty easily. You can either just try to shoot the hole in the gap between the barriers, but even if you can't make that, if you fall underneath the highway, that's not a problem either. If you just drive up to the wall where the ladder is, because they put two ladders there, one on either side of the highway, so if you fall off the bridge, you can continue playing. If you just drive up to that wall, take a left turn and drive up the hill, and then turn left some more back towards the highway and do a boost off the edge, you can fly right out onto the highway, and you can bring as many brute choppers as you want. Now, the problem, of course, is that once you go back past that bit, the Marines will ignore all the vehicles. They won't get it. They won't get in them as passengers. They won't drive them. They just ignore them, which means that on Legendary, most of them are going to die. As an enemy to fight against, the one thing I don't like about the chopper, I guess, is that it has that incredibly powerful gun. Not so much for the damage that it does, but for the effect that it has on objects and vehicles. One of the hardest things to do against a lot of choppers is that if you don't keep your Warthog on the ground, if you, go really fast over one of these little hills and take a jump, there's a really good chance that a brute chopper will hit you with that gun in midair and flip you over before you even get a chance to land the jump. So, you'll end up, and you're going to end up dead really quickly that way, especially on Legendary. Or, it'll even push you over the edge of something. If you're driving really close to a cliff edge, you can get hit by that and it'll knock you right off.
Well, there's a bit of technique involved in getting it. I mean, the first time I played through the campaign and I tried to use the chopper, I had very, very little success in utilizing it properly. But once you get a few practices in, when you jump, you use the boost at the right time, you can actually get considerably more air than if you were to use the boost before you leave the ground. I think the trick to the chopper is turning it around. That's the hardest part for me is if you need to get to someone behind you, you literally have to do a really big loop because you cannot drive backwards effectively.
Yeah, but even so, you can make a lot. You can make turns a lot tighter than you can in, say, the Warthog.
Absolutely.
I think it's not quite as flexible as the Ghost, which can move sideways. It can strafe, and that's why I think it's one of the easiest vehicles for the AI to use because they don't have to think about. They don't have to make any three-point turns. That's why the AI, I think, is so terrible at driving the Warthog, is that, they come right up against an obstacle. And, for a normal person, it's a really easy maneuver. You just need to, make a turn in reverse, move forward, go around the obstacle, and continue. And it seems to give the Marines huge, huge problems. Whereas in the Ghost, it's no big deal. The AI behaves the same as it would if it was walking. It just... it sidesteps and then goes forward, and it's very, very simple and straightforward. And speaking of the Ghost, the other reason why I like the chopper is that it's not the Ghost. After playing Halo 2, especially some of the vehicle encounters in Halo 2, namely Metropolis and Delta Halo, there are some bits where it just seems that there are just endless processions of pairs of Ghosts. And even on Legendary, it's not much of a challenge. It's just... you're blowing up Ghosts from pretty far away. And if you have Sputnik on, okay, they really fly very far, and that's fun for a few minutes. But I found the choppers were more interesting to fight against, and I was kind of gratified that there was a good mix. I never got to the point in Halo 3 where I was like, oh, wow, another two choppers, ho-hum. And that kind of happens, I think, with ghosts in Halo 2 after a while.
Yeah, I'd have to definitely have to agree with that. I mean, every time you play Metropolis, you're just driving up in a tank, blowing them to pieces. There's no competition there. It's all one-sided, even on Legendary.
Yeah, and just like the ghosts, the choppers also, there's no chance to do that really in this level. But when we get to later levels, the chopper is really good for bringing vehicles indoors because it can make it can make tight turns, even though it looks a lot bigger than the ghost. There are actually places you can get in more easily with a chopper than you can with the ghost. It's very odd.
Namely because it's thinner. Yeah. It's a lot thinner than the ghost. It doesn't have the wings on either side. Yeah. So there are actually, I don't think it comes up in Sever Highway. We'll talk about it more when it does come up. But there are actually like force fields on the door that prevent vehicles from getting through. They weren't really too effective. You can get through every single one of them.
Well, it depends which kind you're talking about. There are two barriers in Savo Highway that are vehicle.
They're invisible ones.
Those are the visible ones. The invisible ones, I don't think there are any of this. There are a lot of them on the next level of Storm, so we'll talk about those there. But here we've got only the visible barriers. What did you think about those? And that's not a really dramatic element, but this is the first time we've seen that kind of an item in the Halo games. What did you think about that as an encounter, where twice in this level you come up to areas where groups of troops are defending these barriers where you can just walk through it and vehicles can't?
I don't know. Vehicle retardant barriers, they could have been utilized a little bit better if there were a few more of them, if there was four or five of them, or even just two or three, like, straight in a row, in which you'd be flooded with a group of Covenant every time you went through, probably Brutes. Much like in the level Citadel part of the Covenant at the very end with the Halo rings, if it was sort of set up like that, structured a little bit, I think it would have been more enjoyable. But, it's new, but I didn't think much of it when I played through.
I thought it was interesting just because when you come to the first one, if you don't go through it right away, say you mop everything up and then you just kind of walk around, there's a Sergeant Stacker voice clip that we'll play that says that the barrier only blocks vehicles. You should be able to walk right through. I just kind of wanted to know exactly what kind of technology they're using here that can distinguish between a vehicle like a Warthog and a guy who is a cyborg wearing a metal suit. He's supposed to weigh like, what, half a ton? I mean, how does this thing not know how does it know he's not a vehicle?
That's what I was thinking. You put it to very good words.
And I haven't tried it yet, but it also occurred to me I was wondering what would happen to Marines if you could push them through the barrier without being in a vehicle.
The Marines go through it?
I don't know. It just occurred to me now. I'm going to have to go back and try that when I get a chance, when I get my console back.
When do you get the console? What did you... all right, we're going to talk about... It's my anger topic, but I think we're going to get to that a bit later. But the Warthogs, the significant change between the Warthogs in Halo 1 and 2 to Halo 3.
I, from my perspective, I thought the Warthog changed more from 1 to 2 than it did from 2 to 3. Because after all, you got a number of changes there. Once the one in Halo 1, it handles very, very slippery. It's very quick, but it's indestructible. In Halo 2, it doesn't seem quite as quick. It's a little bit more stable, but of course it can be blown up. Now, in Savo Highway, yes, just like in Halo 2, the vehicles can be destroyed, but they give you plenty. They start you off with one troop hog and one lag cannon hog each. And in several of the major encounters, there are slightly damaged hogs available that if you lose the one you're in, you can get another one. In fact, I think in each of two places, there's another lag hog and another troop hog. And so if you lose one, you can pick those up and continue. Or, you know, if you want to swap out, I mean, you can get people to say, okay, forget the troop hog, I don't care. Blow it up, get the other lag hog, and Marines will get in that. There seems to be a limit, though, that the Marines don't want to let you have more than the hog you're in and then one extra hog. It seems like it's really hard to get, like, three or four that Marines will just kind of ignore the extra ones. So what bothers you about the Halo 3 Warthog?
It's the way that the Halo 2 Warthog handled is when you'd have to go. I think the best example I can use is people call it many different names, but when you played Coagulation, I called it Cat and Mouse. I had a lot of different names for it. But with two wraiths and four warthogs, and you're all trying to stay alive, basically, with those wraiths. Handling the warthog on that, if I tried to do that in Halo 3, I'd be gone probably in the first 30 seconds of the game. When the vehicle turns, it slows down, it cuts the engine. If you're not turning completely to your left or completely to your right, I've noticed a significant drop in speed for the warthog turning. And this is really, really frustrating, and this is much more frustrating in multiplayer. But in Legendary, if you're trying to get away from a wraith and you're just, you know, soft turning, you're going to slow down and they're going to get you because they're insanely accurate. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would say that one thing, and this is not specific to any change in the way any of the vehicles works. I think it has a lot to do with the damage model, and that, you know, so many people were upset about the idea of the Halo 2 Jackal sniper. And what they thought was unfair about that was that this is an enemy that largely you can't see until it fires. After that, it's too late because it's a one-shot kill. And legendary raids are really a lot like that. You know, if you stick the smallest piece of the chief or a vehicle that the chief is in to a place where a wraith can see you, that wraith is incredibly quick at getting off a shot. That is fairly accurate, you know, and if you stand still long enough, or if you, you know, as you point out, if you have this problem where you're turning and, you know, you scrub off some speed in the turn, you know, there's just one hit and then you're dead. I would say that the effect really is that for most of the infantry encounters, heroic is a really good balanced difficulty level for giving even a fairly good player a decent challenge. Without killing you so often that it's frustrating. Yeah, because I think the ideal playing situation is to constantly feel as if you're just on the edge of being killed without ever actually dying. And for infantry encounters, heroic pretty much achieves that. Once you start talking about vehicle encounters, especially when you start talking about vehicle encounters where the AI is involved, in other words, either you're depending on the AI gunner to take out targets while you drive, or you're gunning, depending on the AI driver, to bring you near targets and to avoid fire. Legendary gets a lot harder, and heroic is not really the sweet spot anymore because, you know, it's very, very likely that you're gonna come around the corner and you're gonna get killed. And I think normal becomes that sweet spot. If you really want to have fun on the heavy vehicle levels like Savo Highway, if you don't want to be serious about it, in other words, if you don't want to say, okay, I'm much better off getting out of the vehicle and handling this encounter myself, well, yeah, it is. I mean, that's if you want to handle it the best way, these encounters, you should ignore the vehicles because it's easier that way. In fact, I think when I was trying to get one of the metascoring achievements on Savo Highway, the easiest way to get it is to just ignore all the vehicles because you can't get headshots. Headshot multipliers while you're driving a vehicle. So if you just, and you're much more likely that you're going to get killed. So you just ignore that, let the Marines drive the vehicles off and they'll get themselves killed, and then you rack up headshots, and it's an easy way to get the 15,000 points even without any skulls.
Well, you still do get points. You're right, you don't get headshot multipliers. You still do get points if you put enough skulls on. What's this level skull?
That's no catches on the storm. That's the next one. The one on this one is tough luck. It's just after you get the scripting event where the Covenant cruiser flies overhead. It's basically
Yep.
Yeah, it's basically down in the valley on the edge of a cliff, and you've got to jump onto the support for the highway and then jump from there onto a ledge. And it's actually not that hard to get. Yep. It's actually one that I got before I looked at any guides or anything like that, because it just seemed like a really obvious place for Bungie to put one. It's got that big pipe, you know, along the air with the ladders up and down, and it just seemed like, yeah, Bungie's definitely going to hide something around there.
Well, I do recall looking on the internet on the day after I got Halo 3 for a guide into finding that skull, and there was a two-sentence line explaining where it was, and I spent about 2.5 hours following those instructions and found nothing. I was looking on the other side. It was thanks to it was the same guys who found I Would Have Been Your Daddy, but this one just didn't have much effort put into it.
Yeah, I think that was the second one that I picked up in the game, and the first one I really found myself. The first one, of course, is blind, and that's really just, it's right out in the open. You don't even have to look.
That wasn't supposed to happen.
Oh, really?
So moving on, I think we've got the glitch of the week, which is sort of an awkward one for us to do, seeing as you don't have an Xbox and I haven't.
Yeah,
been
but the HBO front page did have one this week. Phoenix 42 found a glitch on the multiplayer map Narrows, where if you jump into a man cannon and then deploy a specific piece of equipment, like a deployable cover or a regenerator, in midair, your flight will reverse and you'll return to the man cannon that you jumped into. And I haven't myself yet, though.
I'll probably be trying that out shortly after the end of this podcast. That's tactically efficient. If you want to go over there, it makes them look up. If I hear someone go over the grav lift, I'll look over to the grav lift. Expect them to be coming over, and then they don't come over. You've been distracted, and they're coming over the bridge or under the bridge.
And this would be really, you know, typically, I'm going to say this would be really, really hard to do, and then someone will figure out a way to do it and repeat it. What always happens to me on Narrows is that I jump in the man cannon, and then I hit somebody midair coming from the other direction, and then you both fall to your deaths. What I wonder is there a way to jump into the man cannon, fly towards someone who's swimming out of it, deploy the equipment at just the right time so that the other guy falls to his death, but you bounce back to the man cannon?
I've seen some pretty interesting happenings with that man cannon, I must say. If you play, there's a cannon war game type variant. If you play that enough, you see some pretty interesting things on that man cannon. You can come off second best in a situation where you're just flying over, and all of a sudden there's 20, 30 of the fusion coils flying at you. Now, by themselves, one of them is enough to knock you off course, but even so, I've been hit by about 3 or 4 of them, flown back right onto the bridge on the left there, as you're going over to the blue side. It's just a matter of timing. Eventually someone will do it. That'll happen, I'm sure. I'm sure it's possible.
Okay, so not so much a glitch, but there are some tricks. Now, one thing that occurs to me also about Sava Highway is that this is probably the most speedrun friendly level in the whole game, because there are very few things that you actually have to do to finish the level. Obviously, there are those two vehicle barriers. You have to go through both of those, so you have to destroy the little pedestal that's powering those. Other than that, the only other thing you have to destroy is that there's a turret, there's a shade turret, just to the right of the last vehicle barrier. You have to destroy that before you destroy the barrier. Well, actually, you don't have to do it before, but you have to destroy that and the barrier. You can actually leave every other enemy in that encounter alive, and you can still get the cutscene.
That would make... I think you told me about this last week when we were planning to do the podcast. And the, it got
better since that. Goat Rope actually did a run, I think, on easy, and he finished the level in 3 minutes and 30 seconds. You literally just get in a Warthog and you drive through everything without stopping, and then he gets out and gets in a brute chopper just before the big vehicle encounter, and he takes that and he drives up the left side. He avoids the highway and all the rates. He basically does a boost just at the right moment on the hill on the left-hand side, shoots up over the brute blockade to the very end, takes out the turret and then the barrier, and the level ends, and that's it. And it was about 3 minutes faster than the best. I think the best time I was able to do on easy or normal was about 5.5 minutes, because I kept having to go back and get the I would stop and get the grav lift, because that was the best way for me to get a vehicle over that first gap in the highway. He says it's possible to shoot that gap in a Warthog without the grav lift and still make it. And I end up falling through every time. I can't do it.
It's possible, really? Because I did it. I managed to. Yeah, I screwed. I didn't do it on purpose, though. I'm just scooting through. I'm determined, I guess. If you get the timing right, if you hit the there's like a metal beam, crooked metal beam. If you hit that right, you bounce back up just in the way that the.
I kept trying it. I wasn't able to do it. Although I do just think actually. Driving the vehicles through the man cannon through the grav lift, is fun just all by itself. And one time actually, I drove 3 Warthogs up to that bit, deployed the grav lift just to see how many I could get. You know, if I could drive one through and then jump back and see if I could get another one. I couldn't get all 3, but I'll probably keep trying it. Yeah, I did get 2.
I did get 2.
You can drive one over, then you can jump back and get a second one and drive that through before the grav lift expires. And I think if you get everything close enough together, I think it might be possible to get 3. And then, of course, you can add as many brute choppers as you can collect, because you can drive those up without a lift anyway.
All right, so we'll move on now to the anger, sadness, and envy section of our...
Okay, well, we already touched upon my... suggestion for anger. My suggestion for anger is Marines who won't get into vehicles. Because I just talking about this same section of broken highway where you drive up to the highway right after the Covenant cruiser flies overhead, and before you get to the barriers, all the Marines will get out of your vehicles and jump across that little bit of twisted metal to go into the next encounter, which is where the Phantoms come and drop off. The groups of brutes, and then eventually they drop off a wraith. And it's obvious that Bungie designed this encounter not to be a vehicle encounter. Although it does make me wonder why they gave you the grav lift just a bit back, because there's really no use for that except getting vehicles over this gap. I can't think of what else that is good for. I can't help think. But bringing the vehicle is limited use. I mean, bringing the chopper is really useful because you get that weapon. You know, you get this very powerful weapon with unlimited ammunition, and that's very helpful. Bringing a Warthog isn't that helpful, though, because Marines will refuse to get in it. They will not get in any vehicle until that encounter ends and the Pelicans drop off more Warthogs.
I can empathize with you on that one. My anger, as we touched on before, is the Warthog itself.
Okay.
So what have you got up for
my
sadness
is the flip side of my anger. If I'm angry at Marines who don't get into vehicles, then I'm sad about Marines who do get into vehicles. Because on Legendary, I happen to think it's a lot of fun. In fact, I haven't been able to do it. Who knows when I will. But the idea of 4-player online co-op, I just think is amazing. The idea that you could have, through co-op level, 4 lag Warthogs, all with human drivers and AI gunners. I mean, that strikes me as it must be an awful lot of fun. But campaign, when you're playing by yourself, especially on Legendary, you're really, really limited. You know, you're going to pick one Warthog, and there's a very good chance that the other Warthog with you is not going to last past the first serious encounter. You know, when you come out of that tunnel, there's a couple of small groups of brutes and grunts next to crashed Phantoms. But once you get up to the next bit with the first time you see the grunt with the turret, and the next bit you go into a bowl where there's snipers and there's a brute with a brute shot and there's that wall, that little dam. I find basically that on Legendary it's tough to get that second warthog that far. If the guy with the turret doesn't get him, then the brute shot guy will. So
I'm lucky to have that other warthog last anyone within the first encounter on heroic. It didn't last past the first encounter in my last playthrough. Unfortunately.
Yeah, so you know it can be a lot of fun, you know, going with multiple warthogs with multiple vehicles. But on the high difficulty levels, it's really really limited because there's only so much you can do to try and keep that other guy alive. I find the only way to do it really is to drive the passenger warthog. If you can get a heavy weapon to the passenger of your troop hog, the other guy's got a much better chance of keeping himself alive if he's got the lag gun.
Absolutely true. Well, I'd have to say for my sadness this week, and I'm sort of making this one up on the spot, but I'd probably say it's the absence of the mongoose. I think the element of the mongoose, which we see in later levels, I didn't even know it was in this game until I played through campaign and got to the next level, in fact, Storm. But, if the mongoose was in Sabo Highway, it's definitely a preferable choice there. It's got a lot of speed on it. Probably could have taken that jump a little bit easier. And with a Rocket Marine on the back, you're an unstoppable combination.
Yeah, I think that might make it a little too easy. And I think it may not even be that. I think the reason perhaps why they kept it out is that one of the things that differentiates the Storm from the other vehicle levels is the vehicles that it introduces, you know, so it gets to intro the mongoose. If you had mongooses to play with the whole first level, that kind of makes the Storm less interesting as a level because you wouldn't get anything new.
Very valid point. So sadness this week. Envy.
Yeah, envy this week with Mass Effect out. I guess I have to say that one element from another game that we don't have in Halo 3 is there's no lesbian love scene in Halo 3. What more can you say? I mean, that's going to be, that's going to be Mass Effect's claim to fame. I mean, it's by all accounts, it's an incredible game, but it seems like right now all anybody can talk about is the lesbian love scene.
Before you talked to me before this podcast, I didn't know what Mass Effect was. Now I'm quite interested.
Well, I guess they made the right decision putting that scene in, then, didn't they?
And this week for me, I don't quite have an envy. Apologize. I haven't been able to think of one. I'm quite happy with Halo. Halo is my favorite game.
Now wait, before we did this, I thought you said you were going to use Portal.
Well, I don't know if we can find anything in Portal that can relate to this. Maybe a good sense of humor. Ah. I mean, I played through the first level of Portal, and the overvoice is absolutely hilarious.
I haven't played that yet. I've been waiting to do a comparison when I do get a chance to play it between the machine in Portal, was it GLaDOS and Durandal from Marathon. I don't think there'll be a lot of comparisons between Cortana because Cortana is basically just too good a character. But
that's absolutely true. I just watched the Legendary feature the other day with Jen Taylor going around to different fans. I'm like, oh, I wonder if Nakajin's going to be on.
No.
Unfortunately, you won't.
My wife asked me same question. Like, why didn't she come here? Like, well, it might have been a little too far. But she did go pretty far afield for that feature. I was impressed.
Well, the funniest thing, I think, was when she was spitting out a couple of Cortana lines and that guy had no idea.
Yeah,
that was a neat
gimmick. I was surprised, actually, that more people didn't recognize her. I was kind of wondering, if people are pretending not to know who she is, but I guess she really did surprise some people.
Oh, I bet. All right, well, that would usually wrap up our podcast, and I bet you're sitting there going, what's he talking about now? But I'm going to bring up the last weekly update for Bungie.net. They're Bungie Weekly Update, we had a lot of interesting stuff. Well, what I thought was interesting stuff, but I forgot to mention it before this podcast. But we've also got a new heat map system, and we're getting a variety of updates for Hopper, including, and I'm very happy to say, the Rocket Race Hopper. Unfortunately, Nakajin, you're not going to
just yet. No,
see much of these new changes.
Well, the heat maps I can look at. I mean, I can look at other people's stats, and I can look at the heat maps. In fact, they did a first mention of that feature back during the beta, because it was one of the tools they were using to tweak the levels on the beta. So I remember seeing some heat maps of Valhalla, for instance, where people were dying, where people were getting kills. I do think it's great, and I think probably one of the biggest uses for that is going to be for people to look at when they're designing their own custom game types and maps in Forge, because that means basically they've got almost all the same tools that Bungie has when they design their levels. You know, you can place weapons and spawn points and hills and oddballs and vehicles on the map, and you can design a whole custom rule set for you to play, and then have some people come and test the map for you, and then you get to look at the stats and you can see the same thing. Yeah, you don't even have to play in all those games yourselves. You can give those maps and game types to your friends and have them play them, and then look at the BungieNet stats, and you could look at the maps just like Bungie does and say, okay, here, see, everybody is dying when they get to this spot, or everybody is camping and getting kills in this spot. You can use that information to tweak your own map. I think it's great.
It's great. I think it still needs a little bit of work, mind you, just in that overlooking where all the deaths are, just to pull that great for a lot of the maps that we've got there.
Maybe there should be a way to set a threshold, you know, so you can get a little bit more resolution instead of just saying that.
You can choose the weapons and deaths by and kills by, but if you're looking overall, deaths and kills by is just like, all of Guardian is red. I had a look the other day, the entire thing is red. And I know people die more in the middle than they do out on the, where the...
I don't know, on Guardian I die no matter where I am, so...
Oh, maybe they'll work on that.
Okay, so with that, I think we'll wrap up this episode of Anger, Sadness, and Envy, and we'll be back next time with Level 4, The Storm.
All right, see you later.